This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 244, sponsored by DCBS and listeners like you. And we're live from San Diego. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 244. You might notice it sounds a little different. We might sound a little husky, and that's because we are live from the San Diego Comic-Con, well, our hotel room either way. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with...
Hello, Ron Richards. Just say my name.
I pointed at you. We don't ever get to do that.
This is what happens when there's no script. Yeah. I'm Connor Kilpatrick, and we are recording in our hotel room, so that means if this is your first show, this is going to be a weird one. We don't have normal equipment, we are on the road, we apologize.
Yeah, so it'll be a shorter show, and we're all our voices are strained, and we're mid-San Diego, so...
But if you're lucky, we might start talking about G.I. Joe and get loopy. That's what happens in these shows.
Yeah, so if you're new to the show, you can listen to last week's show, then you'll have a better idea what the show's normally like.
Yep, or tune in next week. Anyway, yes. So this week, Connor, you had the pick. We're going to warn you that we're going to talk about what happens in the books. So we might spoil them, so deal with it.
Yeah, well, this is a review show. We talk about the week's books. Yeah. We talk about we all read our books. We pick the best one. We don't have the script, so we did this. You think we know this by heart by now, 244 times.
I do. I know exactly what's going on.
At iFanboy, we like comics. We read comics every week. We read comics. One of us picks the best comic they read, writes the review about it, and we talk about it here on the show as well as the other books of the week, and that's what we do. Spoilers coming. If you haven't read your books yet, pause the show, come back later. I had to pick. It was hard because there's a lot of books this week, and I thought a lot of good ones, a lot of fun ones. But in the end, I chose Brightest Day number 6, which is the bi-weekly series from DC Comics, Jeff Johns, Peter Tomasi writing, a whole stable of artists doing the art. And I like this book a lot. I know a lot of people don't, but
It's borderline countdown receiving, like the same kind of...
I don't say that. I think that it's very split. I think there's people that really like it, and people don't. It's hard because every time DC does one of these stories, these weekly or bi-weekly stories, people complain about the format and the form. And every time we have to, or people have to reiterate, this is not plotted or written like a monthly book. It unveils itself slower. There's more they can do because they've got more pages and they've got to tell it in a different way. And you've got a 26-part story that's going to be in arcs. And I like that. I like that every 2 weeks we get these different stories with these different characters. Now, not every story is compelling. And I think one of the reasons why this was the pick of the week is because the Hawkman and Hawkgirl story, which I don't find interesting at all, wasn't in this at all.
Yeah, I noticed that, actually.
And the more interesting ones, I think, the Firestorm one is actually becoming really interesting. I like the format of this book is you get really one main story that's like the A plot, and then you get a bunch of the B plots. And the whole plot of Brightest Day is following the characters that came back during Blackest Night, and why they're back, they don't know. And in this one, Martian Manhunter is the main story as he investigates some murders, and at the same time finds out that he kills things. Not people or animals, but he kills foliage. There's a great panel of him walking through the grass with the footprints of the dead grass under him. He doesn't know why, and he goes to Oracle for help, and he goes to Teen Titans for help. And I like that. I like when people who don't normally interact, like they don't normally see a John Jones in the Batcave talking to Oracle scene, and I like seeing unusual pairings like that. Yeah. And the Firestorm one is actually turning out to be really interesting. It's because when the old Firestorm was a Black Lantern during Blackest Night, he killed the new Firestorm's girlfriend. So. And now they're pushed together into one, and that's not really a happy relationship because obviously he doesn't like the old Firestorm because he murders whoever. And the art in that segment was awesome.
Yeah, it was really good.
The art, this guy, this, and they don't tell you who does what scenes.
So it drives me crazy. I know, I can't
but
stand that.
Whoever this guy is, he is great.
Yeah.
This was some good stuff.
Is it Joe Prado?
That's my guess because Ivan Reese does the Aquaman stuff, and it looks like Peter Gleason's doing the Martian Manhunter. Patrick Gleason's doing the Martian Manhunter stuff. It's just process of elimination.
So it's either Scott Clark or Joe Prado. Yeah.
I think it's Scott Clark. I think Joe Prado's doing the other story, the Dead Man story.
Yeah.
But I like this a lot. And I think if you don't like the characters and you're not interested, then you're not going to like it. And that's what it is. People say they don't like the characters and they shouldn't read the story.
I mean, it looks as if the main thrust of this is that they're the mystery that there's a cost to the people who are resurrected.
Yeah, it's not just happy fun time.
Yeah, exactly. And like when what they're dealing with and being Black Lantern seems to have affected them in some way, some negative way in terms of, you know, death related. Throwing up black on people,
that's gonna wreck a party.
I also like there's a John Zian retcon right in the middle with the Aquaman where Mera reveals that she was originally sent to kill him from a rival city in a rival underwater city, but she fell in love with him and didn't kill him, but instead had her baby killed. But there's just Johns will do that. He decides he needs to do the story, and he very deftly says what you thought was real was not real.
Yeah.
This contained all the classic elements I like about this book, and this is the best issue I thought of.
And big cliffhanger at the end with the lady Martian Manhunter getting rocked.
And he goes to her for help, and so clearly something's going on with the white Martians, I think. But
it's a lot of white power still.
There's a lot, and my voice hurts. But it's just I thought this was just a really strong issue, and it was strong because. Right up until I read Brightest Day, number 6 was Thunderbolts, number 146 was going to be the pick of the week.
I thought you were going to go with this. And I remember just recently, like, however many, 2 or 3 issues ago, Ron, you'd picked it, so.
Yeah, no, this has been great. Parker's kicking ass on
it. It's funny because this is the one Avengers, quote-unquote Avengers book that I wasn't going to get.
Yeah.
And I don't remember why. I think it might have been someone, maybe even you raving about it before the pick of the week, that made me get it. And I'm so glad because these there's been 3 issues and 2 of them have been really, really great.
Yep.
This is one of them, I think. This feels very classic Marvel.
It's great. I mean, and Kev Walker's art. I mean, that was the thing that really, really marveled with when this new take started, and it's just continues to be awesome and just like telling great story, but you know, while also having you know great characters and dynamic action, and you know, this is kind of the team goes out into the field and on a case, and things go to hell. And
really well, the other part about it that makes it what I think when you talk about classic Marvel is that they're tying in a bunch of you've got all these characters from disparate worlds, more or less, you know, the like Crossbones is a Captain America. You got Man-Thing. You got, you know, Luke Cage. You got Juggernaut from the X-Men. You got all that stuff going on. And then they're going into a cave with irradiated Terrigen crystals, which is from the Inhumans in Fantastic Four. And so you're just taking, you're like, well, let me take all these little bits of Marvel and put them together in a new way. And they show, because if you don't know how the Inhumans work, when Inhumans hit adolescence, they are exposed to the Terrigen mists, and that unlocks their mutation, and they can go any way, one way or the other. And in this, they find this cave full of the crystals that cause those. And they had sent in a couple of teams to retrieve them and figure it out.
Shielded.
Yeah. And it was two teams that had gone in. And then they sent in the Thunderbolts to figure out what happened to those teams and to finish the job they started. And, of course, it didn't work out. Well, things went very badly.
The crystals were irradiated by pollution or something. There was something underneath them.
Uranium.
Uranium caused them to...
So it was, that was fun. And then, you know, like, you had, like, really good moments with Moonstone and sort of her talking to the team and talking about how Luke Cage actually is, and her saying, he's a hero. What, do you think you're a hero now? No, but I know them when I, you know, like, that kind of stuff. And Ghost saying, you know, taking over Abe's suit, and just a lot of really fun, big ideas, and, you know, there's monsters and mutated things all over the place. It's a wonderful, wonderful issue. 5 stars, easy.
I know it's sort of cliche, like, to say, but it's this is kind of Hellboy-ish.
A little bit, yeah.
It even looks that way.
Yeah, the art does. I mean, you got this team, actually, or BPRD-ish, I guess.
And look at the giant thing.
Yeah, he Luke does Cage's look like hand. Hellboy.
Well, yeah, that's that big gauntlet, the informational thing that's only in this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, but whatever.
Well, Luke Cage is one of those things like Spider-Man a few years ago, where you're like, I don't think you have time for this.
Yeah, no. Well, I'll get to that later when we talk about Avengers. But,
let it go.
But on the last page of, last page is a great full page of Man-Thing, Crossbones, and Mach 5.
Yeah, but why is Man-Thing all... Because
he's ready to fight. He's ready to
go. But he was despondent the entire time, and all of a sudden he's in his pose, and he's like, he's got a gun, but he's not.
He's ready to go.
And that's, Ghost as Abe.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a classic Marvel ending. Fun stuff. Really, really fun issue. Just all sorts of good.
Now, Ron, where do we begin with Amazing Spider-Man 638?
You mean the atrocity to the entire, a blight on the entire comic book industry?
One moment in time, the first part where we're going to find out what happened to Peter and Mary Jane, why didn't they get married, and going to return to One More Day.
Yeah, so when One More Day happened, it flashes back to the moment where Mary Jane makes the deal with Mephisto, saying that, you know, let him be happy and, you know, you can have our love, and it goes back, and then it snaps back to what is now, where for some reason Mary Jane has decided to visit Peter and decide to talk about what happened, why they didn't get married.
And that section drawn by Joe Quesada, and you've got a Peter Parker looking a lot like Joe Quesada.
You got Quesada Quesada's art, you could tell he's out of practice. I mean, it's tough because some stuff looked really good, but then there's a lot of inconsistency in the faces, and everybody's a lot rounder than they are, than they've been previously been drawn, and that sort of thing. But I mean, it wasn't bad, it just wasn't, you know...
So they have a bottle of wine to discuss why they didn't get married. We flash. The other thing I did like was it flashed back to that the wedding issue.
Yep.
And they weaved that in really well.
I thought. I mean, it was an interesting. It was a remix between Paulo Rivera's art and the original art from that annual where they got married. Yeah. And so Paul Ryan did that art originally. Yeah. So you've got what's going on in that annual, and then Rivera comes in with the Lucas. George Lucas-esque remixing of what happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, really kind of focuses on a real throwaway character, just like a thug, who Spider-Man stops in a bank heist and tries to get his revenge. And it's almost like like a what if, or, you know, Back to the Future-esque, like one thing changes. And,
well, Mephisto shows up as a bird and lets the thug out of the cop car. Yeah. So then he's able to... First he goes to get revenge on the cop that arrested him.
Yep.
And then Spider-Man shows up, and there's a chase, and the big sort of portly thug falls on Spider-Man in the alley, and that's why he misses the marriage, because
he skips the wedding.
Because he had a fat guy on him.
Yep, pretty much. Exactly. And even though...
Happened to me, guys.
Yeah. Don't joke!
You might think.
Yeah. Rivera's art is beautiful. Yeah, he's fantastic. Let him do a run or an arc on Spider-Man. It would be great. But this is just classic. Like, this doesn't need to be told. Like,
it's
weird that they felt the need to do that because, as far as I understood, things were going pretty well.
Things have been going great. And the one thing I do got to admit is that it was kind of fun to see him in the black costume. Yeah. More so than a couple years ago when they brought it back because this felt like at that time. You know, and I forgot, like, all the times where he'd take the mask off and then just, the, you know, sitting on the couch with the black costume on. Shot of Peter and his tidy whiteys there. I could have done with that. But
I think this is going. This is two. One of two things. One, they just feel like they can do anything at this point.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a, not an FU to the fans, but sort of a poking, you know, finger in your eye kind of thing. Or they're getting ready to revisit the whole thing and just.
Well, yeah, that's the there have been some rumors that they're gonna go back and undo it and take it back to them being married and
But why? You went through the whole thing. You had the birthing pains already, and things have been going great.
Yeah.
I assume that things are going to change. Well, somehow.
you can say it's because they get the best of both worlds. They get to have all the rigmarole and the sales the first time around, and they get to do it again.
Yeah. We don't know that for sure, though.
No,
we don't
this is my speculation just from reading it. Yeah. This is how it reads, but I could be totally wrong. I hope I'm wrong because I'll be dropping Spider-Man.
But it was written by Quesada, and it's a tough gear shift change between Joe Kelly and all the other guys that have been doing great on the book and this.
It was a couple of clunkers.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he doesn't have time. It shows, I think, a little bit.
But Rivera's art, oh man, he's great.
Yeah.
He's really good. Really, really good. So Boom Studios put out they're putting out an anthology series with stories centered around the legendary club CBGB in New York City. And the first issue came out with two stories, the first one by Kieran Gillen and Mark Ellerby, and the second one written by Sam Humphries with art by Rob G. And this is great. This is fun. I mean, like, if you like music, very similar to the, you know, Gillen's doing his, you know, music journalist in comics pages type thing, is a great history of CBGBs and why it was important and how it affected the punk scene in the 70s. Ellerby's art was a lot of fun. I really like his cartooning. And then the backup story wasn't as strong. It was about a couple of kids whose uncle was, you know, in a band, a band that didn't quite make it, but that had played at CBGB's, and they kind of find out about it, and you know, and it's just, they're a neat little slice of life of, you know, with the club being centered around it. This is a blast. I can't wait for more of these issues to come out. It just seems so much fun.
You spent time at CBGB's?
Yes, I did.
Authentic?
Here and there. I mean, Mark Ellerby, I don't know if he's ever been or not, but there's one shot of like an overhead view of the club where you see the bar and where people stand and the stage and stuff. And then he's got a couple of pinball machines. There are no pinball machines there. There were never pinball machines there. Definitely not when I was there. But they're pulling off of photos and they're pulling off of things that they've read. And I actually got to talk to Kieran Gillen here at San Diego Comic-Con about it. And we were laughing about that because he had never been either. And so, he was talking about the origins. I was telling him about the in CB's, you walk past the stage and go downstairs to go to the bathrooms, and the bathrooms were just painted in black. The toilets were painted in black. No doors on the stalls. No men or women. Just open two toilets, and it was very dirty. So,
did you ever have to go badly enough to use that?
I peed once. That was it. So
what are you saying here on the show? I wanted to never pooped at CBGB's.
I never pooped at CBGB's. I did pee in it though. So, but anyway, but it was fun. This is gonna be a fun little series. It'll be a great trade when it comes out. Great, great, great cover by Jaime Hernandez. Really, really good. So,
yeah, good stuff. Yep.
Good times.
A lot of Avengers books this week.
Well, two.
A lot of Avengers books.
Well, it's got Thunderbolts.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And then there was two Ultimate Avengers books that came out.
True, yeah.
There was five Avengers books this week.
So Avengers number 3 came out and New Avengers number 2. And I know Josh is going to rail me about this, but Spider-Man being in both teams, I'm not working, especially when he makes references to the other team in one book.
On both teams?
He's on both teams. And
well,
in,
that's
and
not
in
like railing you about that. I agree. Yeah.
And in regular Avengers, he goes, oh, why didn't I go with Luke's team? But you are with Luke's team in this one. It's, you know.
Wait, the same guy's writing them, though.
Exactly. So,
and that's why.
I think still the first arc in New Avengers isn't the actual team. It's the thing that they're still. I mean, this is sort of like they were having dinner and they had at the mansion and it got attacked. And there's people from all.
Yeah. You know. That said, some of the dialogue between Spider-Man and Wolverine and New Avengers is some of the best banter dialogue I've read in a while.
These books are both great, I think.
Yeah.
I was a little weary because the first arc of New Avengers is all about Brother Voodoo or Dr. Voodoo and Dormammu or whoever. And
yeah, Dormammu.
I'm not really into that aspect of the Marvel Universe so much, but I enjoyed them both.
Yeah.
I think that for me, the real reason that I was stuck with this book is I think is Immonen.
Immonen's art's great in this,
It's fantastic. And in this one, he really got to show off because you had a giant rampaging Luke Cage.
Yeah.
I don't remember why he was giant, and I don't really care.
Because he was possessed.
He was possessed by the spirit.
And that made him giant?
Yeah.
Either way, I really liked that part of it. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And really, Eminem's stuff just keeps looking better and better and better and better. Yeah. I don't know what it is about it.
Although I got the other one. So. I got to say, second issue in, they already destroyed the mansion again. I mean, come on. But no, it was good. And that, like I said, that Spider-Man dialogue about him watching the baby, it was hysterical.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was good. But
there was great Spider-Man stuff in the Avengers book between him and Spider-Woman hanging out outside. There's too many Spider people on this team.
Yep.
He can be in every team for all I care because he writes Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, he's entertaining. It's just that when you make a reference about it,
should let you know that your stuff doesn't take it so seriously.
Well, no, maybe I want to take it seriously. Well, it's my choice.
That's what he's letting you know.
It's my choice.
It's actually, I mean, it's your choice to take it seriously, but yeah. You can be happy with it or not.
I love this. The Avengers is like a big action.
Yeah.
One. And there's like Thor, like just got to cut loose in this issue and just.
Yeah, people. And you know, and they're splitting up the team, and then it ends at the end with Devil Dinosaur and Kill Raven popping up, which is an interesting choice. But I love time in Avengers 3. I love time travel stories and time stream and that sort of stuff. So it's totally, you know, hitting on that nerve, and yeah, and Romita's gonna draw Spider Woman with that hair, so we just have to accept that.
Just take it, take it. DC Legacies number 3. Yeah. Came out. I'm still loving this series. This is the history of the DC Universe told through the life of this one dude whose name I never remember. But in this issue, he hits the Silver Age. So we go from Golden Age, the first couple of issues, now we're in the Silver Age, with the classic art, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, who is, he looks like that old Silver Age-y style, you know, guy. I mean, it's very clean. It's very throwback. It's sort of like in that Jerry Ordway school of art.
Yep.
And the one thing that was surprising with this issue was there's a lot of him and his life, and less of the
heroes.
and it's always funny to see how they pick and choose what they tell in the story. Like in this issue, the first appearance of Superman is basically right out of the movie. He catches her with the and they even have the dialogue. You've got me. Who's got you?
Yeah.
And it's the old and it's the formation of the Justice League, but it's the old Justice League, the original one with Batman and Superman, and not the retconned one with. Black Canary and not Batman Superman, but whatever. Yep. This is fun. I said it before when I had made the pick. If you're at all interested in DCU and want to learn about it, the history, this is a perfect book.
And Dave Gibbons' backup, right?
And Dave Gibbons' backup. They talked about the Challengers of the Unknown.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Nothing wrong with that.
They get some really high quality guys on these in art on these books, especially the backup stuff.
Go ahead. As I said, I'll probably take pause and thank Discount Comic Book Service for sponsoring this episode. Go to dcbservice.com and do all your mail order needs for all of your comic books. You can order anything in previews. They've got specials of up to 70% off. They've normally got everything discounted to 45% off. They've got great flat rate shipping. And if you go to dcbservice.com, you can sign up to get, they'll ship your books to you weekly, biweekly, monthly, whenever you want. So go to DCB Service, and we thank them for sponsoring this episode.
If you do not have a wonderful store, it is a wonderful way to get everything you need. Because we hear all the time, oh, my store doesn't carry that. Fix that. Do what you want. Connor, did you read G.I. Joe Cobra 6?
Yes, and it was creepy.
It was, I gotta say, again, it takes a set of balls to go, all right, I'm going to bring in Cobra La, Globulus, and Serpentor into the world that was set up in the previous issues of G.I. Joe Cobra.
Yeah.
That's ballsy.
It takes giant serpentine balls.
Yeah, did it work?
It was a really odd issue. I'm not going to tell you that I really liked it. But I was kind of impressed by what it was trying to do. I think it was mostly successful.
Yeah.
What you've got is this story of a journalist / ex-journalist / PI who has been pulled into this, basically this Scientology-like cult. And they're drugging him over and over. So every other page is this, like, Cobra religion, spiritual, cult-themed legend hallucination thing, and then they come back to the present and you've got Serpentor like trying to brainwash him into being on his team, and it's the issue itself was really hypnotic, and like the art style kept changing.
When he's drugged, it gets more painted. It's like a painted style. Yeah. It's almost like a religious style of art.
Literally Globulus was
Globulus
in this. Jeez. I think it was good. I think I like it because they're not making, what they're doing is they're not making Serpentor like the head of Cobra. He's like the spiritual leader of the whole thing, and it actually provides a really good reason for how they would have an army of people. Because when I've been reading Cobras, why would you join this? Why would you do that? Why would you hook up with them? And it kind of makes sense how that works. There's a spiritual
and the art is kind of funny.
The art's hilarious
because you've got Serpentor in these religious poses, these Jesus poses.
And funny, the more I look at it, the more I think about it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
Does he say this I command at all?
I don't believe he does.
No.
But again, globulus.
Yeah, true. Good point. Cobra law.
Yeah.
But they say, do they say la 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 la?
The Cobra law is definitely in this.
But Cobra law is like the Shangri-La. It's like, right.
But do they say la 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 la?
No. But not yet, but give it time.
Okay. Yeah, Nemesis Enforcer hasn't shown up either.
Oh, wow. Nemesis Enforcer.
Why would we even...
Do you remember how bad the toy was? He had tiny, tiny wings.
Yeah.
Nothing good came out of that movie. Right.
Well, this story.
Oh, it's fantastic. Love that movie.
The story did, I guess.
BET.
It seems pretty good.
Stupid.
No, the BET, that's not the movie.
Yes, it is.
You're right,
broadcast
it is.
Energy transmitter.
Yeah.
But that's not the one with the three pieces.
No, that's
the Serpentor thing.
No, he's talking about the episode's arc where there was that big main gun and it broke up into three pieces.
Oh, right, yeah, that was different. Yeah.
Those were the three part.
And Storm Shadow had to fight Spirit. And
yeah.
That was awesome.
But then there was the five part when they were getting all the pieces of Serpentor.
That was a good one too.
That was amazing. That week, Reverend Sergeant Slaughter did the intros and outros to that. It was like an event.
Why was Alexander the Great's tomb underwater?
I don't know.
Why?
But it was...
I forgot about that. Time to get the tomb stuff.
Yeah. I remember racing home. I can't miss the third part. You know, like...
It was a week-long event.
It was a week-long event. Yeah, it was great. They don't do that anymore. Jeez.
Gene splicing. That's really heavy stuff for kids.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
DNA and everything.
Yeah. And then Cobra Commander had like issues. He's like, "Well, wait, I thought I was
the boss. Why are we making a new boss?
Yeah.
I'm a good boss.
That was good. Yeah.
Who was in charge? He should have been in charge, right?
Yeah. I'm right here. I'm in the room.
These are lies.
They're making a new. Wait, I'm in the room.
Streets of Gotham.
Oh right,
14.
That's me. It's funny. I kind of at first I was annoyed, but now I respect the fact that they just shoved Hush down our throats.
Yep.
Hush is the bad guy. Batman Streets of Gotham is a bad guy in Batman Beyond, which takes place in the future, but he's still the villain in this book.
He's just his nightmare will
they
never
just
end.
Refuse. And it's funny because Paul Dini's actually made him tolerable, but and
he showed up at some point recently.
Detective.
And you liked that too.
Yeah,
right?
because Paul Dini's actually done a really good job of making him an interesting villain, but he doesn't seem to want to write anybody else because all Paul Dini's Streets of Gotham has pretty much been about. This, actually, it's the one part of the story not being told. It's why does the world not think Bruce is dead? Because Hush is walked. They have Hush propped up as Bruce.
That is one hell of a cover from Dustin Nguyen.
It's a great
again.
Cover.
Jesus.
He's fantastic on covers. But they've got they've got him walking around as Bruce, and they've got the outsiders, you know, monitoring him at all times so he doesn't do anything stupid because he tried to give away all Bruce's money in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then if we flash back to when...
and that's Gwyn inside?
Yes,
that's his style too? Jesus.
And we flash back to when Thomas met Martha.
Oh.
And she didn't like him because he was a bit of a ladies' man.
Well, it's the pencil-thin mustache.
And well, no, that's another. This is they flash back to when Bruce's parents met through Hush's parents because they're neighbors, and also John Zatara is there. So it's like a old school. Zatara reveals Thomas Wayne is a bit of a drunk. He's got stuff coming out of his mouth, which looks like
what is that?
It looks like he's spitting up like a baby, but he's not.
Or something else.
Yeah. Oh, we had to go there, didn't we?
He could not help it.
It's just it was weird.
Thomas Wayne, let's take a shot in the mouth. There's nothing wrong with it. It's okay.
You know, Thomas Wayne sounds a lot like Thomas Jane.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Let me draw him a little like that there.
All right, this is for broadcast.
Broadcast, schmaldcast. Next book.
You got to give the people what they want. In this case, True Blood is what the people want. I don't know if you've noticed the show,
it's
quite
very popular.
So they decided to do a comic book about it, and I thought, okay, I enjoy the show. I enjoy it for its over the top attitudes about sexuality.
For its carnival like atmosphere.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's campiness.
Yeah, it is very campy. The comic book was
plotted by Alan Ball, who's the creator of the show.
Yep.
And, yes.
Yep. And then written by Mariah Hunner. And David Tishman. David Tishman has worked with Howard Chaykin a lot in the past.
Yep.
It was tedious. It was very tedious for several reasons. This is one of those comics that it was really done. It's not for us.
Yeah.
I think in a way it was very. It was almost instructive on how to be reading the comic book because of that. Like I found it really tiresome, and there was a lot. Like they had to for some reason. It's in one takes place in one place. It takes place in Merlot's.
The local bar.
The local bar. It doesn't get any. And every single character shows up. And every time a character shows up, they name the character like, which is what you're supposed to
do. I don't have a problem with that. It's just more of the idea that these people wouldn't be going to the bar.
Right, but the thing was, every character showed up, so they had to keep doing it. They were like, Sam Rilott, what are you doing here? Hello, oh, Sam Compton, Sookie Stack. Like, it was just, there was ways to bury that stuff a little bit. And then there was a lot of people standing around talking to each other. And then, really, one of the big problems I had was, from the art standpoint, the characters weren't acting very well. They're fairly good likenesses, but...
We talk about all the time the problem with licensed art is usually it ends up being DVD captures, mm-hmm. and therefore there's no life to it. And we talked about the opposite with Buffy, how George Jonty keeps the characters looking like the actors enough, but still makes it actual art.
Yes, their essence, but cartooning.
Here it's just stiff.
Yeah,
it just looks weird.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where, like, I don't know why everyone is there, but they're in the bar and there's a guy who's this shadowy guy in the corner, and he turns out to be a big tentacled monster, and then they all sort of take turns yelling at him, and that's the issue, and it's just not good.
So, do you think it's good for True Blood fans who don't read comics? Though?
No. I think good comics are good comics are good comics, and people will buy it, and I hope that IDW is successful. But I think it would have been better off to just do really good comics, and I don't think it was there.
All right.
So there. What was there, in every possible sense of the word, and also surrounds us completely, is The Walking Dead. Issue number 75 came out this week. You may know this as the Aliens issue. It was long ago Robert Kirkman said, I think I'm going to bring the Aliens in 75. Aliens were part of the Walking Dead pitch a long time ago, just to get the thing sold, but it was never really a thing. So I read this, and I hadn't really heard about what was supposed to happen in it. Connor mentioned, Otley did some art in that one.
Yeah.
So I get through it, and I was like, that was a really good issue. There was a lot of really good character stuff with Rick, and the normal part of it was good, and the tension is being wrapped up, and all on its own, it's just a fine Walking Dead story. And by the way, it keeps hitting me that this is at issue 75.
Which is crazy, yeah. That was the joke. I mean, what happened was that somebody wrote in saying, issue 7, like, this is great, but I don't see how you're going to make this last longer. And then Robert goes, 75 is when the aliens come, not thinking he'd ever get to issue 75.
And
so he did.
So you get to the end of the regular issue. There's a letter page. And so to anybody who's been reading the issues normally,
it ends.
That's the end of the issue in your mind. Read through the letters page.
And he talks about it in the letter
page. Yeah, so if you skip it and you flip the page, you go, oh, look, there's more. And on this, a bright flash comes up and Rick disappears and Michonne is, Rick! And then you flip the page and we are in colored Ryan Otleyville as Rick wakes up in a future, it's Fear Agent, basically.
Yeah.
He wakes up in the Fear Agent world and he has a robot hand. And he looks, and a door goes whoosh, and there's a superhero costume, and he sighs, well, I'll put that on. I'm going to put this on.
Well, it's better than a gown.
This green and yellow masked outfit. He goes outside. No, he gets dropped out of a chute, like Luke in Empire.
Yeah.
And there was
into a big alien zombie battle.
And then all of the people who have died so far, including, you follow me? That guy. I don't remember his name. Are there. And then... And then Michonne slices a zombie in half with a lightsaber. And then there's a two-page spread of her head and her explaining everything that's happened. It brought us all back. We're sorry this had to happen this way. Rick, we need you to help us. Then Michonne gets her head crushed by the governor.
Which is great.
And then it just says, not to be continued.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh. Robert Kirkman broke the internet.
He wins. He totally wins.
Would this have been a great way to end the series?
Yeah, it would have been great.
I would have loved that.
Well, I just think it's just ballsy because then in the back of the book is all these stills and stuff from the TV show.
Yeah.
And anybody who's curious about the TV show picks up the comic for the first time to be like, what the fuck is this?
Totally an inside joke.
Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, you can't, like, what's it supposed to be? It's supposed to be a lot of fun, and it was exactly that.
That would have been a great final, the final issue.
Yeah.
He really should have ended it that way.
Yeah, it is... It is suspicious timing.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta say, like, it's ballsy. Like, we're gonna do this big inside joke. And, like, and the thing is, on its own, just without that bit at all, like, it's a perfectly fine issue.
Sure.
It's a very good issue. It's a 5-star book. But that really was, like, fun. And Otley, Otley.
Otley's good.
Otley's
fun.
It's good stuff. So that was a very
good. We just heard Josh giggling in the room when we were all here.
Came in to show everyone.
Yeah, it was great.
Like, look at this.
Cool.
So that was the week of comics. There was a lot more, but those were the ones we were going to talk about.
Exactly.
It was good stuff. Honestly, It's only been a few days since we read these, but it's, yeah. the con's been so long. I
feels like weeks. Yeah,
like, I don't remember what happened.
Yeah. San Diego. So we want to thank everybody who came out to our events here at the con. Everybody stopped by the booth. It's been great seeing you. We've had a lot of fun. We've been shooting tons of video, so you want to stay tuned every Wednesday for the next year.
6.5 years.
Seven to nine decades.
To see everybody that we've been talking to, we've talked to a ton of awesome people. So definitely going to want to check out on ifanboy.com, revision3.com/ifanboy, the video shows as they come out over the next couple of weeks.
By that 6th year, is going to be really out of date.
Yeah, it'll be awkward, but they're good. They're good. It's good content.
So thank you, and if you want to check out more, you go to ifanboy.com. We have all of our weekly content and our writing staff. Paul has been the MVP of the week. He's been all alone in the iFanboy offices.
Well, Jim and Tom have helped him.
Jim and Tom have helped.
Apparently, the thing was that we weren't thinking we shut off the water and power before we left.
Yeah.
And locked him in.
Yeah.
So
he's been the MVP, but go check it out. We've got our weekly content. And, you know, you can go to iFanboy and make your pull list on the comics page. You can rate and review your books. Please go do that.
If you want to know what's been going on at the con, go to iFanboy. And at this point, you'll have to scroll back pages.
Yep.
You have to see what's been going on. There's so much happening.
Yep.
Here, and even a little bit of it has to do with comics.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We've decided to take a unique thing on the show this year. We're going to talk about comics. Yeah. I know for Comic-Con that's a thing, but as you can hear, you hear Ron's voice. I've never even heard that happen.
I know. Yeah, it's getting trained. So
send us an email, contact@ifanboy.com. Call our voicemail line, 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Normally in the show we do email and voicemail, but we're just not prepared.
Yeah, sorry.
Next time, yeah. Everything returns to normal next week. Assuming we make it out of this alive.
Yeah, we still got a couple of days to go. So, all right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor,
and I am Josh.
Whoosh, Josh.